Hello, and welcome to another edition of Interviewing the Legends, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency, devoted to promoting musicians and authors worldwide. Call us today at 941-877-1552 to start your free publicity evaluation. Remember, we shine only when we make you shine. Please welcome the host of Interviewing the Legends, music journalist, author, and entrepreneur, Ray Shasho.
Hello once again, everyone. I'm your host, Ray Shasho, and welcome to another edition of Interviewing the Legends on BBS Radio, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency. Call us today at 941-877-1552 or email us at publicityworksagency.com. Remember, we shine only when we make you shine. Uriah Heep debuted in 1970 with the release of one of hard rock's milestones, Very Heavy, Very Humble, and have since sold in excess of 40 million albums worldwide. They constantly tour the world, playing up to 125 shows a year to 500,000 plus fans. The band's live set features the classic tracks from the 70s and is a musical journey from the band's beginnings to the present day. Along with Led Zeppelin, Black Sabbath, and Deep Purple, Uriah Heep helped invent a decorative and uniquely British form of heavy metal. Uriah Heep have been responsible for the most elevated and intelligent use of vocals in a heavy metal context among the major bands, inventing the genre in the 1970s. It is for this reason Heep were coined the Beach Boys of heavy metal, and their influence is there for all to see in other bands, including Queen. They were also one of the forerunners of using the Hammond organ along with Mick's signature wah-wah guitar, and this became the template for their sound. Success has followed the forging of such an audacious formula across 25 studio albums along with myriad live releases and compilations. Uriah Heep have managed to sell 40 million records worldwide, 4 million of those in the U.S. Impressive American numbers, but that leaves 36 million records to be sold in the rest of the world, underscoring the fact that Uriah Heep have become, through their relentless dedication to touring, a truly global band with particularly success in Germany, Scandinavia, Japan, Eastern Europe, and Russia, where they were the first Western rock band to play live in Moscow in December 1987 to 180,000 people. Through their success as rock and roll pioneers, this enabled other bands to follow in their wake, and Russia is now part of every band's touring schedule. In celebration of the release of their 25th studio album, Living the Dream, classic rock icon Uriah Heep will join fellow British rock icons Judas Priest on an extensive North American tour kicking off May 3rd in Hollywood, Florida. The trek will run through June 29th in Las Vegas. Uriah Heep has sold in excess of 45 million albums worldwide and performed over 4,000 shows in some 60 countries. Please welcome keyboardist, singer, and songwriter for Uriah Heep, Phil Lanson, to Interviewing the Legends. Hey, man.
Hey, what's going on, man?
You should be here in beautiful, warm Florida.
well, funny enough, we're in Albany at the moment, and excuse my voice. We're in Albany at the moment. The sun's just come out, so I'm quite impressed.
Well, take care of that throat, man. You're gonna, you know, thankfully you're not the lead singer, because you'd be in big trouble.
Yeah, you can bet on that, mate. No, everything will be fine. Don't worry about it. I'll muscle through. I'll soldier through like a good soldier.
All right, awesome. I covered your show at the House of Blues in Orlando last year and interviewed Mick while I was there. I got there early and I saw the people trickle in, and man, that crowd built up, and it was such a exciting crowd watching you guys. It's amazing all these years with all the lineup changes, you know, how you guys just kind of, You know, nothing's changed. You guys are as popular as ever.
I gotta be honest, you know, at the end of the day, a good song will definitely stand the test of time. And he does have a plethora of songs dating back from 70 to the present day. And the fans really love the way we interweave the new songs into the old. And that's a template that we've been using for a while. And it works so well. And the test is, you know, proof is in the test. Every time we play a show, every new song we play gets the same reception as an old song. And it's incredible.
Well, you guys got your own style now, you know. Your style is nothing like the old heap, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a good thing, because, you know, it's fresh, you know, the band is always fresh, which I love.
Well, what we tend to do is when we sit down to write songs, new songs, we look at the old template of Heat back in the old days.
Right.
And we say, well, let's keep that going alive, but we'll put a layer of today on top of it and then introduce some different colors. And as long as we've got the power of the instrumentation and the vocals, it will always remain there. The songs will always fit into that slot. So that's a good template.
Well, I've been a Heat fan from way back, man, from the beginning. I've had Ken Hensley on the show. I'm friends with Lee Kerslake. I've had him on the show. I've interviewed Mick twice, so it's now an honor to interview you.
That's great.
Do you talk to Ken at all? Have you talked to Ken?
No, I haven't spoken to Ken since we did the Moscow show. That's a long time. We're on each other's Facebook though. I get messages and we send messages occasionally, you know. But no, not generally.
You know,
generally, because we're forging ahead, and you know, we don't sort of dwell on the past at all in any way, shape, or form. We've just got a forward outlook to our future, you know.
Well, that's why you're so successful. I've never seen a band so successful in so many countries before, and that's the truth. Mm-hmm. That is the truth.
Well, yeah, I guess we're lucky in that respect. I mean, yeah. You've got to remember that all the Eastern European and Russian territories opened up because in the black market days when the Iron Curtain was up, you know, I'm sure you remember the the state of Russia then. They had to go to people had to go to someone's house in a village miles away where one man had a vinyl album and one record player, and we gathered around it in silence and, you know, in secrecy to listen to this music. And URI was one of those bands. So of course, when everything changed, we had an immediate in with all those territories, so that's that side of the world.
Yeah, it's amazing, though. You know, because there's a lot of Brit bands that just stay over there and they don't come over here. What one example I think is Status Quo. You know, they just kind of, you know, they had their audience overseas. They never really come to the U.S.
I don't understand that really. I suppose it's a personal thing for some people. Just they like to hang around their own territory, if you like.
Right.
And I guess that's one of those bands. Well, there's nothing you can say about it, really.
Yeah, Susie Quattro, which I'm friends with Susie Quattro. She made it big over there, and she really doesn't come to the States too much anymore. She just kind of hangs around Europe. So that happens a lot.
I think that's because it's a very successful oldie touring schedule in Europe and the UK, and they're quite happy to just keep to that, really.
But you know those fans are great though in Europe, and Amsterdam is one, Japan. You know, they're very loyal fans, you know? They really are.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Well, I gotta tell you, man, URI Heap, Living the Dream, I gave it 5 stars. It's it's a great album, and it has a lot of great reviews, you know?
It does.
Yeah. You got some great tracks on there. You know, Grazed by Heaven. Some of the songs, there's a couple of songs that sound very Deep Purple-ish, but that's just because you guys are, you know, got the Hammond organ.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's inevitable some of those black and white notes are going to find their way into a certain area of a certain song.
Exactly.
and
you're a great keyboard player, by the way, and songwriter.
Thank you.
And songwriter. I think my favorite tune on that is, it's hard to say, but I think I like Goodbye to Innocence.
Uh-huh, okay.
How many of the songs did you write most of the songs with Mick?
I think there's 10 tracks on there, and I co-wrote 9 of them.
Right.
With Mick. Bernie wrote the excuse me, Bernie wrote the lyrics to that, Goodbye to Innocence. And Dave and, Just Got Soto wrote the opening track, Grace to Heaven. Grace by Heaven. Yeah. I'm constantly writing music and writing songs and composing and doing other projects. So I kind of, I always had a big backlog of songs or, I write all the time. I'm home. So there's so much stuff on my computer, you know.
Yeah.
Some of it's complete, some of it's not complete. So I've always got a lot of stuff to choose from.
Right.
So,
and,
when we get together when we get together to write a new song or album, we, put all our ideas into the pool and see what comes out, and that's how we choose.
So if you have a song that you've done at home, I guess you just present it to the band and,
Oh, no, in some cases, yes, but mainly, me and Mick get together with both of our ideas.
Right.
And we fling them onto the pot and go, okay, what we got here? We look at my songs, we look at his ideas, arrangements and riffs, and we amalgamate the two together, and that's how we form the songs. Then we present them, when they're in a finished demo state, we then present them to the rest of the band.
Okay.
And any songs that I've written without Mick on my own, I'll present them, and if there's anything that anyone wants to do, we do that as well. So that's how we work, really.
So how do you get inspired to write? I mean, it's hard. You know, I'm a writer, you know, and it's hard to come up with, you know, different ideas and all the time and be fresh, you know?
Yeah. I mean, how does anyone write? I don't know. I don't really know. To be honest, I don't know the answer to that question. All I know is that if I'm available at home to do some work, I'll switch everything on. I might get an idea then, and I'll just work on that. And it grows, you see?
Right.
You can't force inspiration. There's no way. It will come from something. You know, it might just be a rhythm. You've got an idea about a rhythm and go, well, that'd be a great rhythm to put so-and-so to.
Right.
So you start working on this jigsaw puzzle of music and something comes out of it. Generally something comes out of it. Sometimes it doesn't, of course. But, you know, you just keep plowing away. And unfortunately, I've got the habit of writing all the time, not just music, but I've written a novel, I've got published, and solo albums. So I've got this terrible habit of completely always writing, inventing.
Do you say the novel was published?
Yeah, I've got a novel published, yeah.
Oh, really? Is it out? Is it out now?
It's out. You can order it from Barnes & Noble. It's called Curse of the Mud Chalk Devil, and it's a fantasy adventure for 9 to 14-year-olds.
Oh, you're kidding me. That's awesome, man.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, it's out there, mate.
Congratulations. I'll definitely buy that.
Check it out, yeah.
Yeah, maybe they'll make a movie out of it. You'll be the next Harry Potter, you know.
There you go. So everything's possible.
Everything is possible, exactly. Well, I'll promote the hell out of it. I'll put it all on my sites and everything for you.
Well, that's really cool. Where are you based in the U.S.? You're not on the east side. You're on the west side, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm on the west side of Florida, but the radio station broadcasts from California.
Oh, does it? Oh, I see.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah.
Well, that's great because we're heading out that way in next month, so that'll be cool.
Yeah, that'll be awesome. Yeah.
Well, excellent.
Well, I love the album. Another favorite of mine is, It's All Been Said. To me, the opening is a classic Heap opening, which is really cool. You know?
Yeah. A lot of people have picked up on that.
Yeah. I love it.
We were thinking about doing it live, but the show with Priest is so short, we can't really afford to do long songs, you know.
Yeah, how long is the, how's your set list with, Judas Priest? How many songs do you have?
We got a pretty good workout. We got two sets because we're doing two shows a night in some places like tonight. So we do have set A and set B. Well, set B, we just change around two songs. We had Rainbow Demon and one of the new Knocking on Your Door on the second set. The first set we put in Stealing. And I can't remember the other, it's not in front of me right now. But we got it perfectly worked out to 1 hour. It's a 1 hour show.
So you got two shows a night? Really?
Sorry, I think about two shows in one town.
Oh, okay. And yeah, New York, right?
Well, we're in New York, so we got two shows in Albany tonight and tomorrow night.
Gotcha. Yeah.
And then we move on. We've got another two shows in Milwaukee coming up. And then a few others. In Austin, there's two nights in Austin, two nights in Frisco. So, yeah, we're covering the whole country.
Yeah, it's a rather long tour. I'm going to publish the listing, the concert listing for you as well, so everybody can know which where you guys
are.
That'd
be great.
And
that would be really very helpful.
And of course, your website. You know, the link to your website and everything.
Definitely, that's really cool.
Yeah, you know what I love too is your solo album. If You Think I'm Crazy.
Oh yeah, right. Yeah, see what I mean. I keep writing stuff, and I'm telling you,
getting
recorded, so I'll go out and do it.
I love it.
I've got another one coming out in July.
Do you really? Wow, you're a busy man.
I can't stop.
That's what writers do, man.
No, it's on my. So if you go on phillanson.com, you'll see all the. You can see where the album covers are and stuff like that, and the book and everything.
If You Think I'm Crazy, that's a wild cover. I love the cover. That's really imaginative.
That guy's brilliant. His name's Michael Cheval, and he lives in New York State, actually.
Uh-huh.
And I found him on the internet 8 months ago, 2 years ago. And the funny thing, you get this, I contacted him somehow by email on the site, and I put my phone number on the message.
Right.
Not expecting to get an answer. The next day, I get a call from him. He says, "Hi, is that Phil?" I said, "Yeah, it's Michael Cheval here. I'm a huge Uriah Heep fan." I went, "What?" My God! So that was it, because we had made a relationship, and he gave me the picture, which is cool.
It's awesome. It's really cool looking. It's kind of Alice in Wonderland in a way, with a mixture of a bunch of
things. It's a bit abstract and a bit absurd, but then that's kind of artwork he does.
Yeah. Yeah, it's
really
great.
Cool. I love it.
Well, my favorite tune on that album is Mind Over Matter. That's an incredible tune, man. And you know, the album is so different than, you know, the Uriah Heep stuff. It's totally different. And I love it. It's a great album. I really, really like it.
That was the thing I had to be careful of, because you don't want a band member doing a solo album that sounds like the band.
Yeah,
because that's a big mistake. You have to try your best to keep away from it. Even though there are a couple of little pointers on the album, but there's no song that's was written for Heap or anything like that.
Yeah, like Lover's Highway. To me, it's kind of very prog, you know.
Yeah, I like that too. Yeah,
very
that's
prog.
Really cool.
Carolyn could be a top 40 track if radio was only good anymore.
Yeah, really. Exactly.
What about, tell me a little bit about I Saw Two Englands. About that.
Well, that's a good one. That was just, well, I was writing the song, and I'm in my room. There's a lot of bookshelves, like a little library, a very small library, but there's a lot of old books there.
Right.
Basically, some that I'd never read, but I've always left it there because I like the look of them. And I was writing a song, which eventually became that song, and I had no lyrics or title or anything. I was just working on the music.
Right.
And I remember looking up at the bookshelf, and that title was one of the books I Saw Two Englands. I thought, what a great title.
It's a great title, yeah.
So I actually worked from the title, which I never normally do. I always start writing lyrics and build the title. But it's the first time I really see the title that I like so much, I had to create a song around it. It's just about two Englands, one that was happy, one that was not so happy.
Right, yeah. When I saw the title, it reminded me of Genesis, you know, Selling England by the Pound.
Oh, yes, one of my favorite albums here.
Yeah, me too. Well, I'm gonna give this album 5 stars as well, because it's that good. It's very original, you know.
Oh, cool.
Very original. Now, this was your first effort, right? Is it solo?
That's the first one, yeah.
Yeah.
I was lucky to know a producer friend of mine I hadn't seen for years, and he was available, and he also had a contact with the arranger, Richard Cottle, who was invaluable. Between the three of us, we created that album, and they booked the musicians for me, and I was so pleased with it. I thought, this is the way to go. This is the way to present my music, you know.
Now, who is who sings on? You have different singers on the tracks, right?
Yeah. John Mitchell sings. John Mitchell sings Mind Over Matter.
Right.
And Sort to England, that's me.
Right.
And another guy called John Makin sang the other songs.
Okay.
He's got a good voice too.
Yeah.
And funny enough, on the one of the backing girls singers, I've got her singing a lead on one of my new album on one of the songs, because she's got such a good voice. So and I also got a duet with her. So I've moved out a little bit on the next album as well. It's just great to keep going.
Yeah, you have a good voice, by the way. You have a very good voice.
Yeah, I mean, I've never seen myself as a singer, but I'm passable.
Passable.
But I'll get away with it.
Well, I love the album. The new one that's coming out, any idea what can we expect from that one?
Well, I've just been listening to it today because I haven't heard it for a while since I've been on tour. I'm a big film score buff. I love film score music, you know, from movies and all that. And I wanted to bring in the flavour of that into some of the songs. Now, the one thing that is important to mention now is the title track is called 48 Seconds.
Oh, I like that.
And 48 Seconds was how long the earthquake happened in 1906 in San Francisco.
Right, okay.
The big earthquake. And I just had this inkling to write a song about it. And it took me a while to it's one of the longer songs. And I've just created that with an orchestra and choir.
Oh, really?
And it's a song, but it's quite proggy. It's got lots of bits in it. But I incorporated two character names into the story so that you could get a handle on what was going on the actual earthquake and the fire that followed. So it's kind of happy, sad, and happy. Because everything works out in the end. I mean, San Francisco got rebuilt.
Bit
of American history.
Yeah, that's great. Nobody thinks about that anymore, you know? It happened so long ago.
Well, I'll tell you something you most certainly wouldn't know about, and that is on the 18th of April this year,
right,
in San Francisco, a plaque was raised onto an area commemorating the actual event. And I believe there was never been a proper official plaque before. It was created by the San Francisco History Society.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Ah, I see. A little bit of American history that I knew about.
I know that. Yeah, thank you for telling me that. How many people...
Yeah, it's just a cool thing, you know.
How many people died from that earthquake, do you know?
Well, they reckon 3,000 at least. But I don't think there was ever a definite figure, but such a long time ago, you know, it was a city, but it wasn't a rambling city. So, you know, a lot of people died. Most of them died in the fire.
In the fire, yeah.
Nothing they couldn't get away. And it was a terrible story. I mean, it took over three days for the fire to be quelled. It was amazing.
Wow.
I think that amount of time when the place was just melting.
Yeah.
And they all rushed to the quay to get to the ferry and to get across Open Bay, and must have been a heck of a time.
Mm. You know the station I broadcast from was involved in that fire at Paradise, California. You know the one that it destroyed the whole town, and it actually burnt the station down. So they rebuilt. But I lost four interviews because they couldn't bring it back. So four of my interviews never got broadcasted. But now they're in Lafayette, California. But that was a tragic thing because the whole town went down in flames. You know, campfire is what they call it. Yeah.
But so, that's incredible, isn't it?
Yeah, you just can't battle a fire. It's just too hard, you know, to stop.
That's right, once it gets going.
Yeah. Exactly. Where are you living? Where are you living now? Are you in the States or are you in England?
Oh, no. I live in southeast England, yeah.
Okay.
I live on the coast, on the southeast part of England, yeah.
Yeah, I do a lot of interviews to England. I just had Bill Nelson on. You know Bill from Bebop Deluxe, remember?
Yeah, of course, yeah.
Good guitar player.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Really good.
That's really cool.
Yeah. What was I going to talk about here? I just lost it for a minute. Well, first of all, you played with a lot of great people in the past. I know you did... You were in a band called, was it Romance, with some guys from UFO, right?
Yeah, Neil Carter.
Neil Carter, right.
Neil Carter. That was a one-off thing. We rehearsed forever and never got any further than one little scout hut gig, and that was the end of it.
That happens.
But we did record some demos, which I lost. The three songs that were really good. I don't know what happened to them. I never found out. But they exist somewhere in the ether. The three songs are there.
That'd be cool if it turns up on YouTube somewhere.
Well, hey, yeah, it's got to, hasn't it? Eventually.
You never know.
You never know. And then, I was with Sweet, the band Sweet for a while.
Yeah.
And in the mid-80s.
That was a great band, and they're still around.
Andy Scott and Mick Duggan there at the time, and that was a good little time. Just recording there, wrote some songs. And yeah, that was good.
Did you do any live shows with them at all?
Yeah, it was all live shows.
Really?
We did two huge tours in Australia.
Uh-huh.
And some work in the UK and Holland. And we did a little bit in Russia as well with them, two gigs out there.
Yeah, they were.
Yeah, I did quite a bit.
They're a fun band. The Sweets is a fun band. They've always been fun.
Oh, yeah.
Good band.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you what. I might have to leave because I've got to shoot off to the show in about 30 minutes.
Okay. So today you're going to go, I guess you're going to rehearse a little bit and do a sound check?
No, probably not. We'll go down there in about half an hour.
Right.
They've got dinner at the catering, they'll take that out of the way, then we'll go and warm up, and then just chill for about half an hour, and then go on.
Okay.
Around about 7:30, something like that.
Sounds great. Hey, let me give you one more question, and then we'll wrap it up. If you had a Field of Dreams wish, like the movie, to perform or collaborate with anyone from the past or present, who would that be?
To collaborate with anyone from the past? Ooh.
Past or present?
After what?
From the past or present, it could be anybody.
Oh, I see. To collaborate with, gosh, there's a few. Gee, there's probably many.
You can name one or two.
I think Peter Gabriel would be good to write with, I suppose.
Yeah.
I think that would be cool. Yeah, there are, Kate Bush, that would be another one.
Yep.
Super good. I think that probably sums it up.
Those are good choices.
Those are the two that come to mind. There are many, many more, of course.
Yeah, great choices. We need good keyboardists, man, because they're far and few between nowadays. You know, I mean,
they are. Yeah, that's true. Yeah,
we lost Keith Emerson. I had Keith on the show. What a nice guy he was. You know,
he was great. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was a funny thing. I met Keith at there was a big charity do in London some years ago, obviously before he passed away. And he was on the bill, or he was a guest or whatever. Anyway, we met in the hotel. He had his partner there, and I was with the drummer, Russ. And we were sitting there waiting to be picked up. And Keith walked in with his partner and went up to say hi, and he said hi to the drummer. We shook hands, and he said, "Hi, Ken."
That's funny.
He was joking, but I mean,
was he joking?
It was funny. We just fell about laughing. Excuse me.
You should have said, "Hi, Greg."
Yeah, hello, Greg.
Hello, Greg.
Yeah, I love it.
He was
okay, that's great.
He's a good guy.
I'm gonna have to shoot.
Phil, thank you so much, man, for being on the show today, for all the great music. Have fun on the tour, and take care of that throat.
I will do that, mate, and thank you for talking to me. It's been fun.
All right, man. Take care.
Take care now. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye now.
Bye.
For more information about Phil Lanzon and Uriah Heep, visit www.uriahheep.com or www.facebook.com/UriahHeepOfficial. Purchase the latest release from Uriah Heep. 5 stars, great reviews, entitled Living the Dream at Amazon.com. Very special thanks to Chipster PR and Consulting for arranging this interview with Phil Lanzon, and of course, the dynamic duo of Doug and Don Newsom of BBS Radio for making the magic happen for each and every broadcast of Interviewing the Legends. If you have comments or suggestions for the show, contact me at interviewingthelegends@gmail.com, and please subscribe to my YouTube channel, Interviewing the Legends with Ray Shasho, for the very latest interviews. It is real news, people. And don't forget to purchase a copy of my book entitled Check the G's, A True Story of an Eclectic American Family and a Wacky Family Business. Available now at Amazon.com. I promise you will live it. Have a great week, everybody.
Thank you, everybody, for listening to Interviewing the Legends, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency. Call 941-877-1552 or visit us at publicityworksagency.com. Specializing in author and music artist publicity plans, we shine when we make you shine. Tune in to Interviewing the Legends every Tuesday at 7 p.m. Pacific Time on PBS Radio, Station 1.